to the political cesspool known worldwide as the South's foremost populist radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
And welcome back to the second hour. The second hour of tonight's broadcast. Of course, it is Saturday, May 9th, 2009. James Edwards here with you alongside Bill Rowland, my co-host for the evening, coming live, as always, from AM 1380 WLRM Radio in Memphis, Tennessee, and broadcasting to you via Liberty News Radio to our affiliate stations, the satellite network, internet, you name it. LNR's got it all covered, and we're very grateful to them for that. Now, during the first hour, Bill and I were discussing, and then we later went behind enemy lines with Keith Alexander, discussing the subject of, of course, of the march towards sodomy here in America and the hate crimes legislation. We're actually going to pay a little more close attention to the hate crimes legislation during the third hour when we have Reverend Ted Pike on to talk about it. But I guess more so than ever, this thing is coming to a head. I say coming to a head, basically, as is normally the case. The vast majority of Americans believe, even in California of all places, that this isn't right. It shouldn't have a place. It shouldn't be legalized. But as usual, we're going to be routed because of the precedent that was set in Brown versus Board. But we normally bounce around. Of course, we cover all of the issues of the political spectrum from end to end on this program, and we talk about a lot of different stuff on this show, but tonight it seems as though we're giving more extensive coverage to this single issue because of the, I guess, urgency. It looks certainly as though the writing's on the wall, but the game isn't over yet. I mean, it isn't law yet. We can still do something about it. It's a lot easier, and let me tell you this, it's a pretty basic logic, but it's a lot easier to stop something from happening than it is to correct it after it's taken place. And that's what we're trying to do here with this issue. But it's getting increasingly hard. It's getting increasingly hard because, again, as we talked about during the first hour, people who do take righteous stands, like us, like Carrie Prejean, like some of these other folks and organizations, they get sullied and they get their name slandered all over the place. And the latest example of that is the Knights of Columbus, of all people, now being called, you guessed it, a hate group. Just like the Ku Klux Klan, and you can read more about this on our blog. Why is Knights of Columbus a hate group? Because they don't think men should marry other men. And here's the story to let you know how this came to be. Some homosexual went to the grocery store the other day, and members of the Knights of Columbus were out in front of the store soliciting donation for their charitable efforts. As you see, I'm sure the Salvation Army does the same thing. You've seen it. Well, anyway, this homo was outraged. Outraged, I tell you, because the Knights of Columbus had given $1.4 million to ban gay marriage in California to help pass Proposition 8. And this is what was said by the protesting sodomite, and I quote, "I don't consider myself to be an activist, but it's just something snapped. I got really mad having them stand outside my grocery store where I live. It really got under my skin. I've been coming to this store for 13 years, and the last thing I want to see is a hate group out there soliciting donations." Bill, what's your take on it?
Well, of course, my take is that this was not a spontaneous act or a spontaneous emotion on the part of this homosexual. Almost in every case, these horrific events that affect homosexuals or minorities are almost always theatrical horror shows, staged events, orchestrated events. And I doubt very seriously that any of this happened by accident. In fact, I'm sure that there'll be other, offenses like this that will be coming up in California. And
well, just like the Rosa Parks thing. I mean, they're following that old playbook again.
It's like Rosa Parks. You know, oh, she just needed a seat on the bus. Well, of course, we know now that despite all the attempts to cover up the facts, that Rosa Parks was trying to get arrested, was trying to get put off the bus in order to pursue a civil rights agenda. And as Drew Lackey, the police officer who is in the famous photograph fingerprinting Rosa Parks, had told us, you know, she was trying to keep a seat from a man who was disabled. A disabled man was trying to get the seat on the bus, and Rosa Parks refused to get up. So, you know, these events are orchestrated, and they're entirely staged for the benefit of a big audience to create a crisis that needs to be resolved.
And then, again, Bill, what you've got here, and I don't mean to interrupt, but I'm really getting amped up about this thing because you've got these contrived incidents, and then you've got the media. You know, we would have never heard about this if it wasn't for the media. Now, the media is propagating this message loud and clear, and you know, getting it out everywhere, letting them know once again that if you don't tote the line, we're going to call you names that you don't want to be called. The Knights of Columbus, my God, Bill, a hate group. Are you kidding me? It was probably two grandmothers ringing their bells, asking for nickels and pennies to be dropped into their jug when this sodomite had this little outburst. And then, of course, the complicit media was all too willing to spread this story and, you know, calling them a hate group. You know, of course, anyone who advances the Christian agenda or the paleoconservative agenda is a hate group. We can never be offended about anything. Our opponents can be offended about everything. Any organization that tries to defend Western civilization or the American way of life is a hate group. Every organization that tries to destroy America by pushing this Marxist radical egalitarian agenda is a progressive defender of the civil rights of the downtrodden. I mean, it couldn't be more backwards.
James, a little history on the Knights of Columbus. In first place, it's a men's organization. There aren't women in the Knights of Columbus proper, so it was probably men out there, grandfathers maybe, making these collections. Another interesting fact about the Knights of Columbus is it was the Knights of Columbus who actually lobbied and who pushed to have the words "One Nation Under God" put in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Well, now I understand why they're being labeled a hate group.
Of course, this is another hateful act on the part of the Knights of Columbus. But man who wrote the Pledge of Allegiance, actually its history is very sour and not at all patriotic, was a man named Bellamy, and he was doing so with the intention of having children all over the country, including those from the recently reunited states in the South, give a pledge that they would, an oath, in other words, that they would always support their country. But Bellamy was actually against any mention of God being made in the Pledge of Allegiance.
And it wasn't until the middle of the 20th century that got inserted, am I correct?
That's correct. And it was the Knights of Columbus who led the charge to have those words put in the Pledge of Allegiance. So that's a little history. So you see, they've been on the hate watch, so to speak, for quite a while. And, of course, anyone who is against religious freedom is also going to be against the Knights of Columbus.
Well, but, and then again, you know, again, that's the way you get added. If you want to know how to get added to the hate list, stand up for Western civilization, stand up for Christianity, and be successful in doing so. I mean, there's a lot of organizations and groups out there that probably agree with us, but very few have a record of success. Obviously, the Knights of Columbus is one of these organizations. But anyway, Bill, see, that's, you know, here we go. I mean, people see this, and I'm afraid that it has a damaging effect on their psyche.
Well, let me get to, I'm gonna keep the trivia game going here for just a second. You mentioned earlier Marion Barry and how now he is standing up for the rights of heterosexuals and marriage and protecting traditional marriage.
Yeah, apparently.
A little history on Marion Barry. His nickname is Shep, S-H-E-P, and this is a nickname he adopted himself because of his admiration of a Soviet propaganda minister named Shapilov. And so he changed his middle name to Shapilov in honor of this Soviet propagandist. The one interesting fact about Shapilov was he had come out in one of the Soviet communist congresses denouncing the spread of homosexuality in Russia. So you see, even Marion Barry is still a little bit influenced by his old Soviet roots in the civil rights movement.
Well, Bill, we got about 15 seconds to break, and see, that's just one of 100 reasons to support this program. On top of all the other stuff, on top of the great guests and the success that we've had both in and out of the radio studio, we give you trivia. And we're going to give you a lot more when we return right after this in the Political Cesspool with James Edwards and Bill Rowland.
Don't go away. The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages.
Don't let me be misunderstood.
Please understand me, baby.
Don't let me be misunderstood.
Don't misunderstand me, baby.
Don't let me be.
Jump in the political cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
Yes, I'm James Edwards, and I'm here with you alongside Bill Rowland. Bill, you know, like a train wreck, some stuff I just can't leave behind, at least without rubbernecking. Marion Barry, I mean, explain this to me. Your take on this, I mean, okay, you gave us a little history. I wasn't even going to bring his name back up because, you know, it just, well, you know why. We don't like talking about trash like that, but, well, then again, this is the political cesspool, and that's, we talk about disturbing issues, but you brought him back up during the trivia challenge, and I just can't leave it, let it go. Why him? I mean, I understand Keith said he voted against gay marriage out there with his obviously totally opposite of the life he's lived. Do you think, like, you know, one of these conservative organizations just happened to grease his paws with the right amount of Benjamins, or what is this? I mean, surely he can't be on our side on this. And if why pick him to be the spokesman of such a movement?
Because he's a black politician. And the just as with all other majority white or principally white organizations or movements, we are not legitimate, or a white organization or movement or political party is not legitimate unless a black has a significant role in the organization. And it of course is absurd, because then all of the attention and all of the power and all of the influence goes into that very insignificant black representation. And but this is, and I wanted to bring this word up in the previous segment. We live in a post-egalitarian age, and what post-egalitarian means, it's a phrase I've coined because I think it's significant, is that equality is no longer an issue. What is an issue now is the empowerment of the least common denominator at the expense of whites. And so whites have adopted the idea and the mentality that in order for us to be legitimate, in order for us to succeed, in order for us to have any representation, we have to have a black proxy in place to speak for us. That's why the Republican Party is run by blacks, a black head president now. That's why you may or may not have mentioned Edgar Steele and his bout with the Constitution Party in, of all places, Idaho.
Yeah, in fact, Bill, I know you were off last week, but Ed was on this show for an hour last week talking about that. You know, it's everywhere. It's in the most obscure places, like the Constitution Party of Idaho, and all the way up to the bigger movements such as the Tea Party movement, which had to have Alan Keyes and black, well, not even songwriters, wannabe songwriters, come and speak and be the figurehead of this all-white movement. And that's a defeatist mentality, Bill, if there ever was one. I mean, they're shooting themselves in the foot before they even have the chance to succeed by doing stuff like this. And, again, I think they're preconditioned to believe that they're going to lose, and they're so afraid of winning, they got to make sure that they lose. They got to make sure that they don't win. And this is what's going on. of course,
tea parties, anyone who went to a tea party would readily and immediately recognize that it was a white event. That I didn't see photographs from any tea party anywhere in the country where there was a significant or even a noticeable black presence or participation. And yet, again, as you said, Alan Keyes and some, singer, non-celebrity singer, black singer who made up some little ditty about the tea parties, they become the instant celebrities of the movement. And you can be sure that the unfortunate activists in this movement and the organizers will just grasp at straws to get another Alan Keyes or a Marion Barry or some other, insignificant black leader to come and participate. And then the focus will be on him and his agenda and not on what was intended to be a movement to, take the fangs out of the government by getting rid of the income tax or by not, at least not being taxed to death. But that's not going to happen.
Of course, that's what it's all about. And, Bill, I want to move back, if we can, for a moment to the Knights of Columbus debate. Well, I say debate, not so much a debate, and we're spending far too much time on this, I say again, but I believe in being thorough, and I want people to know the rest of the story here about the Knights of Columbus and this supermarket kerfuffle. This guy, this homosexual, before we completely move off the subject, and we are going to go to some more trivial stories during the next segment, just a couple of funny stuff you got to hear about. But anyway, wrapping up the books on this Knights of Columbus thing, this homosexual tried to get the manager to kick these Knights of Columbus fundraisers off the property, explaining that they're a hate group. That's, of course, what he explained. But the manager says his hands were tied as his superiors had already approved their presence. So this homosexual stood outside the store harassing them and informing them and everyone that passed that the Knights of Columbus is a hate group. All right. Finally, he left. A while later, he went to another grocery store and saw some more Knights of Columbus members there, too, soliciting donations. Once again, he went to the manager and explained that they're a hate group, and this time the manager kicked them off the property. And again, this guy going and he was just celebrating through the media that he was able to get the Knights of Columbus kicked off the second location. But this is, again, it's Rosa Parks all over again, because Rosa Parks, well, there was another what's the word I'm looking for, Bill? Another ringer in place for Rosa Parks until they find out that she was just, complete trash, and then they replaced her with Rosa. They had tried that with the Rosa Parks thing a couple of times before it succeeded, and the same thing goes here. It's interesting how they continue to follow the same playbook and how it's always successful.
Of course, the answer to this is for the stores and for the Knights of Columbus to begin demanding the removal of maybe some homosexual demonstration or some homosexual benefit or protest outside of a community theater. You'd almost be sure to rankle and upset some homosexuals if you go to a community theater anywhere. But they have to take offense. They have to take aggressive action against this kind of thing, and to issue a letter from the Knights of Columbus that any store that refuses to allow the Knights of Columbus to set up, for instance, collections stores that have been allowing them to, will be put on a list, and we'll say this will circulate through every Catholic church in the community. And all the Catholics will know that you denied us access because of the homosexuals. You've got to retaliate. You've got to make the stores make a choice between a tiny, mentally ill minority and a depraved minority, and people that have traditionally very large families and buy a lot of groceries. I mean, this is the decision that these markets have to make, and it's an unpleasant task. It's one that requires a great deal of nerve and a great deal of determination. But the homosexuals have to be stopped from their agenda. And as we have seen with the Miss America, with the Miss USA pageant, they get very vindictive, hateful, angry, and
hysterical. I mean, Bill, they absolutely get hysterical.
And spiteful, yes.
Who in that, we got 30 seconds to break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about some pretty, well, I say funny stuff. You're really going to want to stay tuned for the next segment. But, Bill, truly, who was the hater in that Miss America stuff? Carrie Prejeune, who offered a very graceful and polite reply, or that sodomite Perez Hilton who goes off calling her four-letter words on every in front of every camera he can stick his face in? I mean, who's hateful in that exchange? Well, of course, the media is going to paint Prejeune to be the hateful one, and as they paint us to be hateful and this, that, and the other. And basically, the bottom line is people are going to have to disregard these labels and these monikers and quit trying to win approval from the very people in the media who are trying to eradicate us from existence.
Guys. We'll be back right,
we'll be back right after this.
Get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool. Call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, Bill, here's another example of what we've been talking about all night. The media finds these little nuggets out there, and they spread it far and wide. And everybody gets the picture. Everybody reads the caption in so many words, this could be you. A North Carolina official has resigned after sending a racist, quote-unquote, email. Doug Fox, who was the head of the North Carolina Alcoholic Beverage Commission, and if you think that's an obscure job, it pays $110,000 a year, is the second government official who's been forced to resign for mailing a picture of watermelons. The first one, of course, as reported on this show, as well, was the California mayor. The story out of Raleigh, North Carolina, is this. I'll read it briefly and then turn it over to Bill for dissection. North Carolina Governor Beverly Perdue asked for and received the resignation of North Carolina Alcoholic Beverage Commission Chairman Doug Fox last Tuesday, just hours after newspapers provided Perdue's office with a copy of a racist illustration sent from Fox's email address just after November's presidential election. The email included an altered photo of the White House lawn that had been turned into an enormous watermelon patch. The phrase, "There goes the neighborhood," was printed above the photo. All right, Bill. I mean, seriously, this man lost his job, which apparently his performance was not an issue here. He lost the job because he emailed a picture to his mailing list that somehow the media got wind of that had a picture of the White House with watermelons on it saying, "There goes the neighborhood." You lose your job for not voting for Barack Obama or issuing a caricature poking fun at him as was done countless times against George Bush, a man who I didn't even like, by the way. I mean, Bill, this is what's happening to people. He didn't say anything racist. There wasn't anything racist said. Are watermelons now a racist symbol, like a pointed white hat? Is that what the media wants us to believe? That they're one and the same? That either are bad? I mean, what's going on here, Bill? People losing their jobs for sending out pictures of watermelons.
This is just more preparation for the passage of hate speech laws. And it's preparation because the message that you're receiving from this sort of punishment for such a silly little mistake, let's say, is that people are watching you, first of all, and that there will be people who report you if you send out offensive material through the emails, particularly if it's a business computer or a government computer or some email account that's not a personal account. But the point is that the message here is you're being watched and you can be punished for what you say and for what you think and for what you send on through email. And so that's why this story, stories like the one in North Carolina about the watermelon patch and the one in California about the mayor, is that no one is immune from this sort of prosecution, this sort of persecution, that you can be found out, you will be exposed, you will lose your job, et cetera, et cetera. It is planting the seed of fear in people to communicate with each other, James. And so who do you trust now that you will send an email with some picture or some phrase or some joke that will offend somebody? We're being set up through events like this to lose our freedoms. And it is a campaign of terror against free speech in this country.
If the politically correct are offended, if it is an offense worthy of firing someone to poke fun at the fact, the very obvious fact, that blacks do like watermelons. I mean, what's so bad about that? What's wrong with saying blacks like watermelons? I mean, would that, I mean, am I offended when they say James Edwards likes hamburgers? I mean, if they send out a picture of me with hamburgers around me, would I be offended? I mean, you know, you couldn't get much more bland than this, is what I'm saying. And upon this guy's firing, or upon his forced resignation, the governor of North Carolina went in front of the media to, just to be sure they understood, that he was being fired because of this and nothing else. And I quote Governor Beverly Perdue when she says, "I have accepted Doug Fox's letter of resignation. Emails and images of this nature are offensive and unacceptable. Watermelons, Bill. Watermelons."
Once again, this is about the suppression of free speech and living in a culture that makes you afraid to express yourself.
But Bill, let me ask you this.
The punishments now are losing your job, or maybe being restricted from use of a computer or something else, but it's going to become a printed prison sentence, just as telling a joke in a bar in England can get you put in prison.
But is there any email that could have been sent out,
James?
Is there any email that could have been sent out from a liberal or a Democrat poking fun of European Americans that would have qualified for their resignation or firing?
From now on, when I hear the term white bread, I'm going to be offended, because that term is used in reference to white people. You know, the white bread mentality, or a white bread Christian, or a white bread soccer mom. See, we should have these terms that we can use to have people punished and to have people lose their jobs. He referred to me as a white bread. Well, that's offensive, because white bread's what? Associated with white people. And it even has our racial designation in the term, you know. You know, we know of certain types of nuts that could be considered offensive if the old-fashioned term was used for them. But, you know, nevertheless, why is it that this particular food group is being being reserved as a secret code for racism? Well, what other little secret codes will there be to have people brought up before some court of inquiry to lose their jobs? This is exactly the kind of society that puts people in prison for speaking out against wrongs and untruths. And that's where we're headed. You're not going to be allowed to tell the truth if it's politically incorrect.
Well, the simple truth, Bill, and the fact of the matter is, if and when these hate crimes laws are passed in America, as they have been passed everywhere else, there will never, I dare say never, will there be a non-white that is prosecuted under these laws. It will only be whites. And no matter what other people may say about us or even each other, these laws will not be applicable to them. But, you know, if it's offensive to say anything about watermelons, you better damn sure not say anything about fried chicken, particularly if you're referring to a couple of unfortunate scenarios that played out last week. I mean, you know, we all hear the "you might be a redneck if" bill, and of course these are all, you're a redneck if you're white, you're a redneck if you work, you're a redneck if you believe in God. You know the jokes. But suffice to say that if you get bent out of shape and Popeye's runs out of cheap fried chicken, you might not be a redneck. In fact, odds are very good that you're not. Here's the proof. And if you have never been to our website, please visit it for no other reason than to see these two videos that we've posted to our blog at thepoliticalcesspool.org, you will find two different news reports, one in New York and one in Minnesota. In Minnesota, cops had to be dispatched to a Popeye's chicken location because so many blacks there were angry because there were no more $4.99 eight-piece specials available. They mobbed the store. And after the first story is finished, notice how embarrassed the female news anchor is on the right. Blacks scream racism, Bill, when they're not on TV or when they don't dominate all of the anchor positions of these local newscasts. Then they scream racism when they are on TV doing things that they typically do. But this is just one of those quirky stories that we're not supposed to hear about, but you do hear about on the political cesspool. Blacks in New York and Minnesota causing a scene, causing an uproar, so bad, in fact, that the police had to be called because they were that mad that they couldn't get the $4.99 Popeye's special.
Well, then there was one, I think one visitor to that Popeye's had spent $35 on a cab to get a discount $4.99 eight-piece chicken box. So, you know, there again is an example of really using your head when it comes to you know, going out and having a meal. You spend $35 on a cab to get a $5 box of chicken.
As Rod Dreher said recently, Bill, and he's another so-called Christian spokesman, and I quote, "Indeed, if there is anything to these scientific claims about race and IQ, I don't want to know what they are because that kind of knowledge is dangerous." So we're a very dangerous program, Bill. You'd have to question the IQ of anyone who would spend $35 on a cab to get a $4 box of chicken. We'll be back right after this.
Don't go away. The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages.
We gotta get out of this place. If it's the last thing we ever do, we gotta get out of this place. Girl, there's a better life.
Welcome back. To get on the political cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll-free, at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
Of course, last week we had, quite a lot of call volume on this program. I understand that we've had a few callers waiting patiently tonight. We're going to try to take some calls during the third hour. Got a lot of news to cover tonight, and we're doing our best to get through it as efficiently as possible. But we do very much, I can't stress the importance of your phone calls to us, and I know some people have called in and we haven't quite had the time to get to you yet. Call in during the third hour. We will make the time, I promise, and I appreciate your patience. But we were talking in the last segment, after spending so much of the first 2 hours of this program this evening, talking about some very serious and dire situations. We were talking about things still serious just because of the sheer ridiculousness of them, but also a little bit lighter and trivial and fair. But I got one more for you along those lines. It's a well-known fact, of course, that most criminals are supporters of Barack Obama. We've all seen the mugshots. But Obama is no longer just the favorite politician of criminals. He's now the direct inspiration for violent crimes. Two black women, I know it's racist to tell you the race of people if it's a black person involved in a crime, but you know me. Two black women in Cincinnati have just been arrested for barging into a home and assaulting the resident in order to steal a picture of Barack Obama that they saw in the house. I read now, and you can't make this stuff up. I read now directly from the body of the story itself. The headline reading, "Two Women Jailed Over Obama Photo." Maria Anderson wanted that Barack Obama picture, so much so that Wyoming police, Wyoming of all places, say that she walked into a home Friday to take it. She struggled with the owner, who called police for help. Anderson lost and ended up in the Hamilton County Jail without the photo to boot. Officers arrested the getaway driver. This was obviously a very well-thought-out plan. Officers arrested her getaway driver, 31-year-old Tamika Cornwell, about 10 hours after the crime. She's accused of being an accomplice to the burglary, tampering with evidence, and putting her child in danger. I guess the child of one of these two black women went along for the caper as well. Her 3-year-old son was there when the women fought over the picture. Both women are scheduled to appear in court on Monday. That's the day after tomorrow. Bill, I don't know what comment you could have on a story like that, but do you have a penny for your thoughts?
Well, was it a nude picture? I mean, what was the attraction to this? Because certainly you can pick up a Barack Obama picture just about anywhere now. In fact, I expect soon we'll be seeing his picture appearing on waffles or in a watermelon or something, you know, like sometimes people see Jesus or the Virgin Mary. I suspect we'll be seeing images of Barack Obama in all kinds of foods and in all kinds of places.
Well, if it's on a watermelon, whoever grew that watermelon's going to jail.
Why not just wait for Obama to show up in your burrito or, you know, your ham sandwich? Why go and steal the image when it's bound to appear miraculously somewhere?
Well, actually, in one of these stupid European countries, they have Barack Obama chicken fingers. So that's directly correlated him with fried chicken, which we know is a crime. But I guess because it's a liberal that did it, and they did it as a way to, honor Obama, it's not a hate crime. But if you do it in a way that's mocking him, it is. I don't know. I'm still fuzzy on all this. But would you order some Barack Obama chicken fingers, Bill?
Remember, we're in post-egalitarian age, which means that if the liberals or minorities do it, it's okay. If we do it, it's a punishable crime.
Well, talking about post-egalitarian America, where right is wrong and wrong is right, I mean, just look at it this way. It's not a crime to murder your baby, which that's what abortion is. You can murder your baby, commit murder. That's okay. That's legal. But if you think that homosexuality is immoral or unhealthy or unnatural or wrong, you could be sent to jail. I don't know, Bill. Does that sound backwards to you or what?
Well, you know, the Bible says that in the end times, bad will be good and good will be bad. And I think quite obviously we're living in some antichrist age, whether you call it the end of times or whether you call it a period of apocalypse or whatever, or just an antichrist age. Clearly, good is bad, and bad is good, and right is wrong, and wrong is right. And it's very difficult for people to resist the world in the sense of not going along to make sure that you fit into the world somewhere. But I think, Alexander Solzhenitsyn points out in his writing that going along is what gets you into a concentration camp. If you join this long march against the institutions and against normal behavior and against the idea that race is biological and against all sorts of things, you're marching yourself into a concentration camp. And the people who went in to the gulags in the concentration camps rarely were pushed in with the point of a bayonet. They marched in on their own power.
Well, if the Supreme Court has anything to say about it, as we were talking about with Keith Alexander about the Brown versus Board of Education decision being such a stark precedent in a lot of the things that have been inflicted upon us since 1954, you got to ask yourself, how much worse can it get on that Supreme Court? And, Bill, I ask this not facetiously, but because I really don't know. I've been quite busy this week, had a hectic schedule. I don't know what progress has been made or which way they're leaning now. Obviously, the ultra-liberal David Souter is stepping down for the Supreme Court. Barack Obama is going to be replacing him. How's that looking? I mean, obviously it's going to be another antichrist Marxist, but maybe another Jew, a minority. What's going on? Have you heard anything lately on that?
Compass is pointing to a Hispanic female.
Okay, well, that makes sense.
Whether that, in fact, is the case or not remains to be seen. But clearly, Barack Obama is not going to appoint a white male to that position. I don't see that happening. And, you know, I don't think that whoever comes onto the court is replacing a white male, or not a white man anyway, because David Souter was certainly a pretty pathetic example of both our race and manhood in general. And so I suspect that, you know, there's not going to be much change in how the court would vote on you know, issues of liberal versus conservative. I think it's going to be the 5-4 split as it has been for a number of years now.
Well, you know, Bill, one of the names that you mentioned, Puerto Rican woman Sonia Sotomayor, she's not only a woman, which is great, she's also non-white. She hates white people, in fact, and has used her current post to trample our rights repeatedly. But then again, you know, the Jews do represent 2%, a whole 2% of our population, but they only hold 22% of the Supreme Court seats. So, of course, they're upset about that gross underrepresentation. So, you know, there might be some pressure put on him there to put another good radical leftist in that position, coming from you know, the Zionist corner of the ring. I don't know. You know, it's and again, the final decision, as we always know, will be made by President Rahm Emanuel, the real president. So it could go either way. But either way, no matter who wins, we're going to lose, and we know that.
Yeah, yes, we're not going to. Our prospects are not improving as time goes by, because I strongly suspect in the next congressional elections, the Republicans are going to take a beating. Not only that, I think that the Republican Party is going to deliberately try to suppress any real conservative candidates who might enter a race as Republicans. I foresee that they are going to become much more obnoxious than they are now, and that the Grand Inquisitor of the Republican Party is going to be Fancy Pants Lindsey Graham, who's going to decide who's a good candidate and who is not.
Well, yeah, the Republican Party, it would be hard to imagine that they could become any more irrelevant, but certainly with Michael Steele at the helm, the one, well, you know, they keep saying Michael Steele's a Republican, Colin Powell's another black Republican, but of course they all voted for Obama, we know that, so I don't know how they, nevertheless, we've got 30 seconds left, it's long story short, hard to imagine that the Republican Party could become any more inept, but it could happen. You know, there's certainly no reason to believe that they're going to make a turn to the right and try to regain the only people who have ever voted for them, the white working class people. They certainly, that's about the only demographic that they don't pander to. But we'll talk more about that during the third hour. Reverend Ted Pike's on deck. We got a lot coming. Stay tuned. James Edwards and Bill Rowland will be back with you on the Political Cesspool radio program, thepoliticalcesspool.org. One more hour to go tonight. If you can stand it, we'll be back. Sit tight, everybody.
Believe it or not, there's a third hour of tonight's installment of the Political Cesspool coming your way right after these messages.
They call the ride.